Good evening, one and all. Yes, another week. I know we got for another one. I was standing in the queue at the supermarket today, and the lady at the checkout was telling us it's 90-something days until Christmas. Like she's counting down already. I go, what? She says, oh, people are buying their stuff for Thanksgiving already, you know. And here we are. I was just talking to my guest, and here on the East Coast, we're like in the, it's meant to be fall, but it's almost like summer. It's like 70, 80 degrees still we've got here. But as she said, I mean, people know I prefer the cooler weather, but she said, you know, make the most of it, because another few weeks or what have you, and we'll be up to our ankles or whatever higher in snow here. But that's the way it goes. Now, what can I tell you about my guest? Because she is, it's strange. She's gone from writing about one thing to now dabbling into fiction. And she's used her own life experiences along the way to help with that. Plus, it being sort of living in a small community helps with that as well. But I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Jodie Susan Millman. Hi, Jodie. How are you doing?
Good, Barry. How are you?
I am not bad. I am not bad. We had a real good week here in Bristol, where I am, in Connecticut, last week. We have what's called the Mum Festival. It's chrysanthemums, I guess, as much as anything else, but people mum as in mother as well. But we have it every year. It's like a 3-4 day thing, so lots of music and stuff going on, and a big parade on the Sunday, and that. So nice evenings sitting out the outside with lots of food trucks and cold beer and listening to the music in the sort of nice evening. So it was nice last week, and back to work this week. Well, it wakes you up, you know. You've got to do it, haven't you?
Ironically, I bought mums for my front porch today.
There you go.
My husband said to me, I thought you were going to wave. And I said, you know what? They're just so beautiful. I mean, this is really the time of year that I really like to put out the pumpkins, put out the mums, and just enjoy the leaves as they fall off my trees.
I have to go ahead
and rake them up, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's the raking up part afterwards.
You're right.
I was looking at the mums today when I was shopping. I think, shall I get one or shan't I? And I thought, well, if I get one without asking, I'm bound to be in trouble because it will be the wrong colour.
Oh.
You know. So
you have to get the right colour. Right?
Yes, I thought I'd better wait until I ask. But it is. They're that sort of buddy, ready to explode in colour type stage at the moment, which I think is great, as you say. I said about, you know, using your own experience, but you were sort of in the law environment.
Yes, I am. Well, I've been practicing law for many, many years. In fact, I was just up at my alma mater, Syracuse University, this past weekend for my law school reunion, which is quite interesting and fun. But yeah, I practiced matrimonial law for many, many years. So, but my book is based around criminal law, and I've done a little bit of that, but not to the extreme, not a murder case, as it's described in my book.
See, that's interesting, because we do get a lot of lawyers over the last couple of years, I reckon, 2-3 years, a lot of lawyers writing books. And I always say, well, it's because half the time when they stand up in court, they're telling a story anyway.
That's a skill. That's absolutely the truth. Yeah. It's a skill that lawyers have to develop.
Exactly.
Not only do they have to be advocates for their clients, they have to be storytellers.
You do. People say about that, but it is. I mean, you have to be able to put over a story to let the judge or the jury see.
That's right.
See what happened. You're creating a picture in words.
That's absolutely true. And like you said, you have to be able to take that story and convince the trier of fact, be it a judge or a jury, or, and most especially, your adversary, that your client is in the right. So storytelling, plotting, researching, and vocabulary are all skills that lawyers develop over the many, many years of practicing law.
Indeed so. However, this, though it's your first thriller, It's not your first book, is it? Because you're actually a best-selling author in your own right.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I started out in nonfiction, And the book that you're referring to is called Seats New York, and it's a guide to the Broadway, off-Broadway concert halls and stadiums in the New York metro area. And that is published by Hal Leonard, which is the largest music publishing organization in the world. And I've been very fortunate with that book, and in fact, it is a bestseller, and it's unique. There are no other books like it, so I really kind of have a niche. But when you're writing nonfiction, Barry, you know, you're doing research and you're writing, and with the type of book that I wrote, I was working with graphic artists and photographers and researchers, and I wanted to move into fiction. And being an attorney and also living in Poughkeepsie, as you know, there was a story that really hit home to me that inspired me to transition over into fiction.
And this is your fiction and your thriller, The Midnight Call. And as you say, it is based on a real life murder.
Yes, the story actually started when I was thinking about it in 1969 when I was in junior high school. I had a teacher for world history who was very charismatic and outgoing. And if we were studying India, we'd have a big Indian feast and the girls would dress up in saris. And the
wow.
guys would wear
that was a
jackets.
Good teacher. That's a good teacher.
It was a good teacher. And if we were studying American history, he'd dress up like, you know, like Teddy Roosevelt. You know, I mean, he really captured our imagination. And then 10 years later, I open up our local paper, which is the Poughkeepsie Journal. His picture's on the front page, and the headline is, Teacher Held in Connection with Teens Shooting.
Oh, my goodness.
So it turns out that this revered teacher had committed murder.
Wow.
Yes.
So, and this is, in your book, it is a similar sort of thing. What's the word I'm looking for? He helps kids. He guides them. I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
Well, in my book, it's really a random act
of violence. Confident. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's interesting because in my book, as in real life, the teacher and the student had no relationship. It was what appeared to be a random act of violence. And we have a situation where the teacher in the middle of the night calls my protagonist, Jesse Martin, who's a pregnant corporate attorney and he is her mentor, her friend, her father's best friend. And he says, I think I've killed someone and I need your help.
Wow.
And from that point on, you know, Jesse's life kind of circles the drain because she unknowingly risks her career, risks her relationship, her health and her unborn child to help her mentor. You know, trying
right.
to beat these
rap.
Beat
See, the rap. It's not only the risk of, you know, herself with this person and everything. I mean, you've added the twist of the baby as well. I mean, you've gone the whole hog with this poor girl suffering, you know, and
that's
putting at risk.
Right. They say when you have a protagonist, just dish it on, right?
Right. Ladled with a trowel, yeah.
That's right.
It certainly is. So, did you obviously, you know, it's based around a small town experience, like you said, you know, from your own a bit of experience as well, sort of thing. And it's different in that sort of environment because everybody knows everybody and the rumor mill runs amok and everything. It must have been very hard there in that sort of environment.
Well, you know, that's true. Everybody does know everybody in a small town. And that's kind of the beauty of this world that I'm trying to create. Everybody has interrelationships. Do you know what a mind map is? Sometimes writers use it to, you know, it's like little balloons. And when I laid it out, it was like Jesse was at the center of this mind map or kind of like the hub on the spoke of a wheel. And everything comes out from her because everyone has some connection to her and connection to one another. And that's the fun of the book, you know, having those kind of relationships revealed. Not in the beginning, but as you go along through the story.
Right, and that must be one of the things that you start off knowing, you know, you've got the story and everything like that. But going back to your analogy, you know, with a hub and a wheel, every so often new spokes must appear, going off to different things. Is that what you found?
Yes, and I found that people had relationships that at first I didn't think that they had, which is really kind of interesting. So as I developed my characters, their relationships became deeper. And also there were relationships that arose that didn't exist before, which is kind of fun.
And as you know, people know on the show here, we've been talking about this for about 9 years now, about the fact that no matter how you plan it out, the characters, you know, lead you on, and different characters, different ways, and minor characters and major roles. And as you, from what you're saying, it's a similar sort of thing with you. You know, you didn't know that they had a relationship until they told you they had a relationship, or it sort of led you to
right.
that path.
Well, what was interesting is I remember there was a portion of the book where I'm writing about House Samuels, and my story is told from three points of view, because I wanted to give the reader a 360-degree view
of
the criminal justice system and of the crime. So I'm telling you from Jesse, who's my main protagonist, Hal Samuels, who's the assistant district attorney, and then the unscrupulous criminal defense attorney, Jeremy Kaplan. So the three of them each possess information and knowledge that the others don't have. So that's why I needed that to create this story. So in one situation, Hal is walking down the street, and in my mind, he was going to turn left. Well, as I'm writing him, he turns right.
Right.
It leads me and the story down, you know, a path that I never even expected.
I know.
And, you know, at first I thought, am I crazy here? But I mean, I guess writers do it all the time.
Oh, no. I would say 90% of writers will tell you this. The thing happens. And you talk to people who don't write, and they'll think you're mad. You know, this is. But
right,
I had.
Exactly.
Like you did with this turning right and left, I had a lady, and I think I told this story a couple of weeks back. But a lady, and she's quite a well known author, and she'd written a book about a young woman who inherits a pub in a little Irish village. And she just looked on the map and picked a name, you know, off of map of Ireland, little name of the village and stuff like that. And she wrote the story, and it was quite a, you know, a hit sort of story. Anyway, about 4 or 5 years later, she had the opportunity to go to Ireland, and she went to that little village. And she knew, once she got in that little village, that if she went down here and turned right or what have you, there would be the church, and there's a stream she'd have to cross over and stuff like that. Never been there in her life. But the story,
that's wild,
wherever it came to her from,
yeah,
she knew from it. And you know, it does happen. People will tell you, it's like minor characters suddenly say, hey, when you're finished with this, I want you to write my story. So I think.
Well, this is an interesting story. One day I had to go to court in Kingston, which is about 45 minutes here north of Poughkeepsie.
Yep.
And I'm in the middle of writing my book, and my main character's name is Jesse, but the protagonist, the alleged killer, is named Terrence Butterfield. So I'm driving up to Kingston, and then all of a sudden, something tells me to look to the left. And I look to the left, and there's a sign that says Butterfield Pottery.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And then so as I'm writing the character and as I'm developing the story, I'm thinking, okay, how can I fit this in? This is just too good. I mean, this is a sign. It's just
right.
too good to be true. So stuff like that does happen.
It does. It does indeed. So poor Jessie, she's got a, you know, she's in at the deep end in this, torn between all sorts of, you know, feelings of, you know, about this mentor, and is it true? Did he do it? Didn't he do it? And, you know, what people are saying, and what she's finding out, plus in her own condition and everything like that.
Right.
Do you think she'll have another book after this one?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have the first draft of the next book, and it's going to be a series. And I'd like to refer to it as Queen City Crimes, because I live in Poughkeepsie, and Poughkeepsie's known as the Queen City of the Hudson.
Okay.
I really like these characters, and I think they have a lot of potential to examine other crimes. And what I like to do is, again, look to Poughkeepsie. We've had some really bizarre crimes here.
Mm-hmm.
So my next one deals with the mysterious disappearance of 8 women in the Hudson Valley, which is a very famous crime here as well. So Jesse is going to be involved with investigating that crime, along with a detective that I briefly mentioned at the beginning of this book, Ebony Jones. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's great. And what, I mean, I know it's not been out long, but what sort of reception have you received?
Oh, you know, it's really been amazing. I mean, I've been fortunate to travel to Houston and Syracuse, Albany, up and down the East Coast, and people love the book, and the reception has been great. I mean, I walk into the bank, and one of the tellers pulls me over. She says, "What are you doing here? Why aren't you home writing the sequel? Go home and write."
Yeah, people expect you to just produce another one like that, you know. Right. Oh, I just finished your book. I want the next one. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I'm working on it. It takes time.
And I was at a gala for an event, and somebody comes running up to me, and they said, I just finished your book. Oh, my God, what happens next? I can't tell you. That's what I said. I can't tell you. You have to wait.
That's right. It's funny. It's like... sometimes people say, oh, yeah, talk about writer's block. I don't think there's such a thing. I think it's that day the characters don't want to talk to you. Perhaps you've upset them by not listening or something like that. It's not a block. It's just that, you know, I'm having a day off. I'm not going to talk to you today. You know, I tried to tell you a story and you didn't listen to me. So I'm going to have a day off. Yes, that's what it's like.
I like that. Sometimes your mind, I think, needs a day off.
Oh, you've got to every time. It's like these people who do like two or three books at the same time, even sometimes in different genres. I don't think I could ever do that. I'd wake up in the morning, today I'm going to be this person. Today I'm going to be this person.
Right.
Or even stop at lunchtime, and after lunch they come back and doing a romance. Why? How can you do that? My brain would fry.
That's split personality. That's what that is.
You've got to. I know that you're obviously, notice you're a member of a lot of, mystery writers, international thriller writers, Sisters in Crime, sort of. You've had people on those from before, obviously. Did you find that really helped you get into the thriller part of it?
It did, because when I first started writing the book, I started to attend Thriller Fest and Craft Fest, which is in July in New York City, which is run by the International Thriller Writers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, writing fiction, I had no clue about what I was doing. So I attended Craft Fest, and what you have these little mini courses which teach you about structure and how to write a villain and how to write cross-genre. And I'm telling you, it totally changed my life, especially meeting a gentleman, an international bestseller named Steve Barry.
Tell me, Steve. Steve is
a great teacher.
He comes on our show every year. He is a great person. I mean, he comes on the show every year with his new book, because he does one book a year. He has three in the pipeline. One book a year he's ready to bring out. The second one is finished and going through the editing stage. And the third one he's planning. And that's how he does it every year. But he comes on, and he is always one of the people we look to when people say about it. You know, the fact it was 10 years of rejections before he got his chance and all this sort of stuff. I mean, he is a really nice person, and I love having him on the show.
Well, I took his mini course in structure, and then I saw that he was giving like a 3 or 4 day course in New York City, which kind of expanded point of view and structure, and I took it, and it really did change my writing and change my life. And really, if you read his books, they are an absolute course in itself.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, I've read most of them, I'm sure. But, you know, it just comes on and he hooks you. You know, I forgot, well, not the last one, the one before. I think I ended up missing a night's sleep because I couldn't stop reading.
Oh, you cannot put them down.
No!
You cannot put them down.
What I say to him is he's like the old Saturday morning cinema, the serials that used to have the old Saturday morning cinema, you know, where the herring's tied to the railway track. What will happen? Come next week, see what happens. And it's like that. It's that you don't have to wait till next week. You can just turn the page in there.
Well, you know, if you think about it, I mean, we all grew up in that era, too. You know, I mean, we all grew up. I mean, even if you listen to Steven Spielberg speak, he grew up in that era as well, of the Saturday morning serial that really taught us how to do, you know, our cliffhangers. Tune in next week for the answer, you know?
And that's when I my YA book, when I did that, because I'd done short romance stories and short stories before, I wrote it like that. I wrote it, each chapter had a hang at the end of it to make the person read the next chapter. I mean, it was short chapters, but it was literally like that, you know. almost like a dot, dot, dot at the end. You know? What's going to happen next sort of thing. Apart from, you know, the thriller stuff and your great new book, you've actually done... quite a bit. Another best-selling thing about New York theatre, a guidebook, and in that way as well. I think you do a podcast yourself, don't you?
I do a podcast. It's called Backstage with the Bardavon, and the Bardavon 1869 Opera House here in Poughkeepsie is the longest-running theater in the country, continuous running theater in the country. And when they started, I mean, they had the Barrymores and Mark Twain and Frank Sinatra. I mean, over the years, they've had, you know, everyone from, I mean, you name it, the Dorsey Band. Mm-hmm. I mean, recently, as a matter of fact, I was just there the night before last hearing an intimate evening with Graham Nash. Fortunate enough to have this theater, and we're fortunate enough to have some of the artists willing to sit down and talk with us. So we're in our second season. We've done Mum and Chance. We've done Mary Stuart Masterson, the conductor of our Philharmonic, Randy Fleischer. There's some documentarians from HBO. There's going to be a documentary called The Apollo Theater. We're interviewing them. I mean, we're doing some really outrageous things, and it's fun talking to people and talking to creative people and finding out what get their juices flowing. You do the same thing.
Yeah, I really do, and I totally understand. I mean, I love doing these shows because I learn all the time. I learn about history of America. I learn about, you know, all sorts of different things, and it's really, yeah, it's fun to me. You know, I mean, as I said, you know, people say about this story. When I first started about 9 years ago, I think it must be, I started because I just brought my YA book out and I did a couple of shows. And to be quite honest, the hosts were terrible. I find myself leading the host into the show,
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
And I was chatting to a lady who was in the same sort of book chat as I was, and I was sort of chatting to her, and she says, you know, I found the same thing with mine. She says, well, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll start one and you start one, and we can be each other's guests on the first episode backwards and forwards so that we get it going. Anyway, long and the short of it is I started with one show and then two shows and then three shows, and I actually went up to four shows a week at one time. I'm actually back to two because I've got two music shows now as well. But, you know, and yes, my writing stopped basically, except for I do write song parodies. I do write parodies. I do a lot of song parodies. But the book writing, I've got like 60 pages into the second book, and but then I find I'm doing as much doing these shows as if I was writing, and I'm helping other people,
I'm
learning as well. And that's what it's all about. I mean, I tell people, oh, you do this. I said, it's not a technical writing show. It's, you know, it's sitting down, having a chat over a cup of tea, perhaps a few laughs. I mean, sometimes the subjects mean you can't have that sort of thing, but you do the best you can, and that's it. And that's what seems to work. Your podcast, that 1869, is it? The Opera House there?
It's 1869 Opera House, yeah.
Right. I mean, is that been, I mean, it must be a beautiful place.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, it's, they just renovated it a couple of years ago, and it seats about 950 people.
Wow.
And then they also operate one over in Kingston, New York, which is about 1500 people. And for example, Jay Leno is coming to town. He's going to be at the larger theater, and we have John Malkovich in a play. He's going to be at the larger theater. The smaller acts, we're having, the gala is going to be Gladys Knight.
Oh, right.
And that's going to be on October 6th, and she's going to be at the smaller theater. It's the 150th anniversary of the Bardavon, so it's really a big deal.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm very fortunate, you know, that they allow me to do the podcast.
I think it's
really
great.
An awful lot of fun.
That's great.
And I have a background in broadcasting.
Oh, okay.
I was on WPDH here in Poughkeepsie. I had a rock and roll radio show for many, many years. So,
right.
I'm not shy when interviewing people.
Well, that's the thing. If you enjoy a good chat, you enjoy a good chat. That's what I say.
I like to open a bottle of wine, Barry. No, none of this tea stuff.
Well, that's early. It's early evening. I've got a beer waiting for me as soon as I finish. So don't worry about that. I can't. Unless it's been a bad day at work, in which case I might have the beer instead of tea. I have to have the tea first and then go on for the beer after that. Well, I tell you, Jody, it's been great chatting to you. Time is whizzed by, as it often does when we have such a great person on the show. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and your books and, of course, your great new thriller, The Midnight Call.
Well, thank you. Well, people can look on the internet. I'm at www.jodesusanmillman.com. They can follow me on Facebook at Jody Susan Millman Author or on Instagram at Jody Millman. And my books are on Amazon or at your local independent bookstore. I'm a strong believer in independent bookstore. I'm going to be in Connecticut on October 10th at the Westport Library.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Perhaps when the next book comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
Absolutely. You have a date.
Okay, thank you. And good luck.
Thank you very much, Barry. It's been great speaking with you this evening.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Jodie Susan Millman. JodeSusanMillman. And you put that all together, JodieSusanMillman.com, and you've got her website. And we've been talking to her about, you know, about herself and the, where she gets the stories from and writing and everything and the theatre and stuff like that. And especially her new book, The Midnight Call. Could you ever suspect that your mentor was a cold-blooded killer? There you go. That's a good start. That gets you on the way, doesn't it? Great book. Lots of great reviews and people really enjoy it. So look out for that. The Midnight Call. The Cold-Blooded Killer. Midnight Call by Jodie, J-O-D-E, Susan Millman, M-I-L-L-M-A-N. Well, that's it for another show this week. I'll be back tomorrow, and who have we got tomorrow? Okay, I've got Elsa Kurt tomorrow coming on the show, so look forward to chatting to Elsa. And of course, don't forget on Sunday from 5 to 6 here on New Visions Radio, we have Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century and different themes. And the theme we're on this week is hers. We had his last week, you got hers, and they've got mine next week. I tell you, different themes. So we'll get on with that. And then from 6.30 to 7, 30 solid minutes of the British invasion. Music that invaded America from England. No chats from me, just solid music for 30 minutes. Well, that's it for now. And until I see you next time, there's only one thing left to say. Don't forget...